I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, contrary to what you might have read online, the city of Seattle says, no, we are not decriminalizing drugs, but history tells us not to believe them. Plus, is the shift to socialism already leading to an explosion of homeless tents? And I finally got to debate someone about taxpayers footing the bill for laser hair removal for transgender prison inmates. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. Hello, hello, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. Who else? Why, where else are you going to get the help you need to make sense of two completely conflicting stories? Well, of course, on Undivided, that's what we're here for. So there's been this big blow up over the last 48 hours, and it was maybe advantageous for us that we didn't cover the story yesterday, or we might have been caught in the middle of it as well. So on Sunday, there's all these news reports, most of them from conservative leaning outlets saying Seattle is about to de facto decriminalize drugs. And, you know, I think that it caught on pretty fast because we have a new socialist mayor, Katie Wilson. And so people picked it up on the right ever. I mean, libs of TikTok, it said less than a week into her role as Seattle mayor, Katie Wilson reportedly ordered the city's police to stop arresting people for open drug use. Fox News, Seattle leaders slammed for police order to stop prosecuting drug users, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So that happened Sunday into Monday a little bit. And then on Monday, all the left-wing and mainstream news outlets are like, what are the right-wingers talking about? That's not true at all. Seattle's mayor hasn't said anything about this. Police are still going to arrest drug users. Let's see, the communists over at the Burner. No, Katie Wilson did not tell Seattle police to stop arresting people for public drug use. Hannah Krieg. Right-wingers online spreading unsubstantiated claims that Mayor Katie Wilson has told SPD to stop arresting people. Como News, Seattle mayor denies police guilt allegations of open drug use arrest suspension, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, man, if I were just a run-of-the-mill news consumer, I would have been like, this is very confusing. And it is quite confusing, isn't it? Allow us to set the record straight. And as normal, the truth is somewhere in the middle. But it also takes some institutional knowledge, a little bit of nuance, the ability to not be too obtuse, to get to the bottom of what's happening and to understand what is the actual outcome of this going to be. And I will say that we were given by a source an email that Seattle Police Chief Sean Barnes sent out a couple days ago that did seem to suggest there's some there. So we got that email. We knew that it wasn't a completely manufactured story, that there was going to be some changes in the way that drug crimes were handled in the city of Seattle. So let me put all the pieces together for you, and I'll give you all the receipts along the way so everyone fully understands what's happening here. And at the back end, I'll give you some institutional knowledge of times in the city's history where this sort of policy has happened before, has been in place before, and what we can expect it to mean for drug abuse and homelessness in the city. Okay, cool. On the same page. Great. So the new city attorney, Eric Evans, she's definitely further to the left than the previous city attorney. She campaigned that way. Not a surprise. She's going to be more hands off on criminals. Seattleites elected her. She ran on that. That's probably what everyone should expect. She put out a memo to the Seattle City Attorney's Office criminal division internally. She said, effective January 1st, consistent with legislative intent, upon receipt of a knowing possession or public use police report from an SPD officer, the case prep team or the reviewing assistant city prosecutor should immediately refer the case to the law enforcement assisted diversion liaison team prior to any filing action. The lead liaison team will assess previous attempts at engagement with the referred individual in consultation with lead. If the referred individual has failed to demonstrate a sustained level or engagement with the lead program or has refused to engage with the lead case manager, the lead liaison will assess the most suitable subsequent action in consultation with the criminal division chief. So what I take that memo to mean is just that let's take everything on face value for now, okay? And then I'll get into my opinion and the nuance of this situation and in practice what the policy will do. So on face value, what the new city attorney is saying and what she's directing her prosecutors to do is if a Seattle police officer refers a drug possession case to you, The first step is to refer it to diversion, not to prosecute it in a traditional way, but to send it to what's called law enforcement assisted diversion and basically see if there's an alternative to putting this person in jail or to criminally prosecuting them. So they want to prioritize diversion over, you know, arrest and traditional prosecution. So that is what the new city attorney is saying. And then there is the email that we got leaked to us from the Seattle police chief, Sean Barnes. So he gets this directive from the city attorney, who's an independently elected official. The city attorney doesn't answer to the mayor. Independently elected official. He gets this directive. He sends out an email to his officers. The email reads in part like this. Effective immediately, all charges related to drug possession and or drug use will be diverted from prosecution to the LEAD program. All instances of drug use or possession will be referred to law enforcement assisted diversion, a program designed to redirect low-level offenders in King County from the criminal justice system into supportive social services. So those are the only two things that are absolutely definitive. In writing, no one can twist them in any sort of way. The Seattle city attorney is saying, if people are arrested for drug possession or drug use, we're going to try diversion first. And if diversion hasn't worked in the past, we're going to explore what other option we might do. I mean, and I don't know if they're going to prosecute or what it's going to be, but diversion first. And in his email, the chief of police is saying what the city attorney said, which is if we send them a case, this is what they're going to do with it. So he's telling his officers as much. So the headlines centered around Katie Wilson, the new socialist mayor. I do wonder if part of that is because people don't understand that the city attorney doesn't work for the mayor. The city attorney was elected separately. The city attorney can do whatever she wants. The mayor cannot direct the city attorney. You can't prosecute drug cases. So the city attorney, though, is deciding to take a diversion approach. But the mayor, Katie Wilson, was on with our friend John Curley over on Cairo Radio, and she said for her part at the mayor's office, there's been no policy change.
There's been no policy change. There was an email from Police Chief Barnes internally, which I think was misinterpreted. But the policy remains what it has been, which is we have an ordinance in Seattle around drug use and possession, and currently officers basically use their discretion around when it's appropriate to do an arrest. You know, we have award-winning diversion programs, and those can be invoked before an arrest, before a booking, before a trial. The bottom line comes down to we're looking for an approach which is using the right strategy in the right circumstances, and that is making sure that we are getting people the help that they need. And, you know, there's a lot of different situations out there, and there's no one-size-fits-all approach. So that's what we're trying to get to. But we have not made any change in policy. We have not discussed any change in policy, and that's where things are at.
Now, a little bit of word soup there, right? But she's saying, hey, it's not on us. But it wouldn't be anyway, unless the mayor helps the city council pass some sort of new laws on drug possession and drug use that prohibit prosecution. It's up to the city attorney. So these are the facts, right, as we know them. And they ended up getting pretty twisted, frankly, by both sides, getting pretty twisted with Katie Wilson being blamed for it, being pretty twisted by the left and saying, what are you talking about? Officers are still going to arrest people for substance abuse. Nothing's changed. There is a change here. So now we know the facts. Now we're going to get into what exactly it means, because we've been through a period of time like this in the city of Seattle before. Under the former city attorney Pete Holmes, he took a very hands-off approach to prosecuting drug offenders. And diversion was very popular, this idea. And look, on its face, that's great, right? I don't know if any of us want the very first thing to be, you're going to jail tonight. Most of us will say we should try to get them, even if you do send them to jail, we should try to get them some sort of help for their substance abuse issue. But the problem is attempts at diversion through law enforcement assisted diversion in the past haven't been successful. And also during that period of time in the city of Seattle, when the city attorney was known and was saying publicly that we're not prosecuting people for simple drug possession, what did the officers do in response? Well, they said, well, if you're not prosecuting it, we're not going to waste our time. So they decided, you know, we're going to focus our attention on making arrests of people who are going to be prosecuted. And so the result was de facto drug decriminalization. This isn't some brand new thing. We've gone through all of this before. And I think that is the point that the president of the Seattle Police Officers Guild was trying to make when he put out this statement, Mike Solon. He said, the recent naive, ignorant political decision to not arrest offenders for open drug use in the city of Seattle is horrifically dangerous and will create more death and societal decay. It embodies an enormous flaw in those in our community who think that meeting people where they are, who are in the throes of addiction, is the correct path to lift them up. This is wrong and is commonly referred to as suicidal empathy. Most cops know that the LEAD program supports this ideology and they don't want to refer cases. It is a waste of time. We've all seen how our streets can be filled with death, decay, blight, and crime when ideology like this infects our city. Now, with this resurrected insane direction, death, destruction, and more human suffering will be supercharged. And he's right. So there's this blame game again between the left and the right about what technically is the change here. But we have to look past that, right? Let's not be too obtuse. Let's look past it and say, what is the realistic impact going to be? If you have day one on the job, the new top prosecutor for the city saying that we're not going to go through traditional prosecution when it comes to someone who's out in the open using drugs, that is a signal of de facto decriminalization. That we're going to go back to a period of time in the city of Seattle where police just looked the other way because they knew that there wasn't going to be any repercussion for this individual. If we spent hours and hours arresting them, booking them, writing the paperwork and all of these things. And the chief Sean Barnes email, he said in the email that nothing was changing for officers, that he was simply letting them know that it'll be the policy of the city attorney's office to refer the cases for diversion rather than traditional prosecution. And he said in the email, my expectation is that officers will continue to charge individuals for drug use or possession when appropriate, which I don't know why he uses that because police don't charge people with crimes. They arrest people. So maybe that's what he meant. He said, for example, when the activity occurs in public view or when probable cause for arrest is established, our mission remains unchanged, and we fully support programs and policies aimed at reducing recidivism and breaking the cycle of repeated criminal justice involvement. But officers have discretion on the street every single day, and they use that discretion. And if they know, I did a ride-along, I'll never forget this. It was one of the first ride-alongs I did as a young reporter covering crime. This is like 15 years ago. And Pete Holmes was the city attorney at the time. And I was with some officers and we were in a patrol car and we were driving down an alleyway near Pike Place Market. So in downtown Seattle. And there's this guy in sort of an alcove and he's got a pipe, I'm assuming smoking something in it, obviously. And he's like literally smoking it in front of the cops. And I'm like 22 years old or something. And this is the first time I've seen somebody using drugs out in the open. And I'm thinking, go get him. Like, oh, go get him. And the officers just keep driving. And I'm like, what are we doing? And they're like, well, the city attorney isn't going to prosecute that person. So it would be a waste of our time to spend time arresting and booking them. So that is the mindset. And I can't blame officers for that. That time, especially when they're so short-staffed, is it not better spent making arrests for crimes that are actually going to be prosecuted, especially when they know that law enforcement-assisted diversion has been a mess? There's no follow-through. It's disorganized. You're just letting somebody off the hook and they never get better. So, you know, between the two narratives, the narrative being pushed by the right and the narrative being pushed, you know, by the right that, oh my gosh, you know, this is going to be a free-for-all with drugs, and the narrative being pushed by the left, which is nothing to see here, folks. The reality is somewhere in the middle, but clearly they are taking a softer approach to drug abuse. They are taking the, oh, let us help you up. Let us help you and coddle you. Fentanyl abuser. That's the approach. And that's not a surprise. Why are we all acting surprised by this? You elected a socialist as the mayor. You elected a uber progressive as the city attorney, replacing a Republican. So nobody should be surprised that now, the 6th day of January, we're learning that there's going to be a softer hand on drug prosecutions. So I hope that helps you understand the confusion, quote unquote, that took place, the different sort of characterizations of what's happening. We are absolutely going to enter a period of time where there's more open air drug abuse. And as a result, because the drug abuse fuels the homelessness crisis, there's a worse homeless crisis because Seattle elected people who want a hands-off approach. So I mentioned there the tie to homelessness, obviously, because it's not just going to be more people using drugs out in the open in Seattle, which is already struggling immensely. It's also going to result in more homeless people and more visible homelessness, because they're also taking a hands-off approach on that. So we wanted our friend Andrea Suarez of We Heart Seattle to join us today just to explain, in the first 6 days of the year, they're out there dealing with homeless people and drug addicts all the time. We wanted her to come on and explain what she's already seeing as a result of this shift in Seattle politics. So she'll join us coming up next. First, I have encouraged you guys to take the First Mark Challenge, firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com, because you could save a boatload of money and still have great insurance, and you never pay them anything. There's really no downside. And I think a new year is a good time, as you're getting your family's budget in order, to take a look at whether you can save money on insurance. So what it entails is you go to firstmarkinsurance.com, schedule time to take the First Mark Challenge. They'll talk to you about your current insurance, go over your insurance needs, and then they'll go out and do their job. They'll shop their market of carriers. They'll be going to bat for you to get good insurance at a good price, and they'll come back to you and they'll share their recommendations. They might be able to save you money and they might not. I'll be honest about that. We've had some undivided viewers who said, hey, I did the First Mark Challenge, but they told me they couldn't save me money and I should stick with my current insurance. And that is the sign of an honest company. So firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance company. So they always have your best interest in mind. All right, continuing on with the theme, drugs and homelessness. Again, this is not, New York's going to be the same way. Mamdani doesn't want to clear homeless people off the streets. This is what they voted for. This is what they're going to get. Unfortunately, when a major city that's supposed to be an economic engine goes in this direction, it impacts all of us. And so it's going to impact all of us. And so we'll talk about it. Now, Katie Wilson, again, socialist, communist, whatever you want to call her, she apparently doesn't mind being called a communist. She made a joke about it a couple days ago. One of the big areas of differential in the race for mayor between her and Bruce Harrell is the fact that Bruce Harrell has been committed to clearing homeless encampments, to basically saying, like, you know, it's closing time. I don't know where you're going to go, but you can't stay here, and sweeping them away. And we gave him credit for that. Now, sometimes they're just sweeping them from place to place, but at least you're sending a message that we're not going to let you, you know, get comfortable in homelessness in our city. For her part, Katie Wilson was never really willing to commit to whether she would put an end to the quote unquote homeless sweeps that Mayor Bruce Harrell had been engaged in. Here's an answer she gave during a debate.
Should homeless people be allowed to stay in tents in parks, Mayor Harrell?
No.
Candidate Wilson.
This is hard for a yes or no question. I'm going to pass on this one.
She just ended up on answering it. And they elected her instead of the guy who just said no. They're like, oh, this, it's not a hard question. Should you allow someone just to remain as long as they'd like in a park, in a homeless, in a tent? And this coming from the woman who, she's been waxing poetic lately about, we want families to enjoy our parks, to be able to sit in the grass and look up at the clouds and read a book. Meanwhile, she's totally fine with the homeless taking over parks. It's just wild. Now, our friend Andrea Suarez with We Heart Seattle, they're a citizen-led organization. You know them well by now. And they go out and try to do the job the government doesn't do, try to help people who are suffering from substance abuse, try to go out and clean the trash that's littering parks and all of these things. And Andrea has already been noticing in the first 6 days of the year a shift in homelessness and substance abuse. I've got to play this clip because I'm going to bring it up with Andrea. And so I wanted to make sure that you watched it first. So she's talking to this drug addict, and he says something to her that is just so sad, but is so true about the city of Seattle.
Is it possible to get clean in the city of Seattle if you've been a street addict for years?
I only see things coming out on the market and things being pushed out there that are just helping people get high for cheaper. You know, maybe cutting some crime by a little bit because they don't have to do as much to get what they need. But, you know, in the end, it's still just... It's just legal dope.
Yeah, he said basically, and what he articulated to her is, it feels like the city of Seattle wants him to be addicted to drugs, wants to keep him in this position and in this situation. And when you really think about the policies, I mean, is that untrue? everything they do to coddle someone and allow them to keep doing what they're doing, even give them the tools they need to keep doing what they're doing. So we're entering what I think will be a pretty sad period for the city of Seattle. I want to have Andrea on, since she talks to drug abusers more than anyone else, and have her react to this news that the current city attorney is going to be diverting cases rather than prosecuting them. Andrea, welcome back to Undivided.
Thank you, Brandy.
Yeah, so I think that first, the big question is, you know, if they're diverting these cases to LEED, LEED isn't a new thing. You talk to drug addicts all the time. Do you believe LEED is an effective way to get them off drugs?
No, I do not.
Why?
Well, there's no system within the system. We've been scratching our head now for years, including I just got off the phone call with former chief of police Carmen Best, who then years ago was scratching her head. What is the process? What are the nuts and bolts of an arrest? And then you triage to where? Does the person get a citation? Does somebody from LEED come back and find the person weeks, days, months later? That's the big question for me, not to mention that I've met thousands of drug addicts over the years, and every single one of them told me, you know, they had to really sweat it out in jail, go through withdrawals, get sick and tired of being sick and tired. The LEED program really cancels rock bottom and cancels accountability for a lot of drug addicts. Still to this day, Erica Evans yesterday, she said, we still have to work it out. Well, it's 2026. Our loved ones are dying. Our businesses are closing. Our streets are chaotic. When do we figure out the system? San Francisco sunsetted the LEED program years ago because it was clunky and the police officers didn't trust the social workers and vice versa. And Mike Solon touched on that yesterday. If the police officers don't believe in it, they'll simply not arrest and move on to a way that they can protect and serve.
Yeah. And then that's what I saw on the street years ago when under the former city attorney, Pete Holmes, where officers like, why would I arrest that guy? We'd be driving down an alley on a ride along with officers and there'd be a guy literally blowing smoke out of a pipe. And the officer's like, well, Pete Holmes isn't going to charge him anyway. So I'm going to go do other things that will result in charges and improve public safety. The other question for you, Andrea, is what's the impact here on the homelessness issue? Because I think you've, you know, given some compliments to the former mayor, Bruce Harrell, for at least wanting to, you know, do sweeps and things like that. If we're going to be now hands off drugs, which is fueling the homeless crisis, where do you think the homeless crisis will go from here?
Well, we are now a sanctuary city for open air drug use, lenient and permissive, no rules playground Seattle, or what I am calling Freeattle. And it's already happening. People are coming here in droves from Everett, Camas, Burien, you name it, because they are actually enforcing their no sit, no lie laws and banning camping in parks. And Seattle is an inflow crisis. And even if I was in love with the LEED program and in love with the new leadership, and I'm going to have to remain optimistic here on day, you know, two of the new year, that we are welcoming everybody around the county, tri-county region, hell, Florida, to come to Seattle to do drugs, to not get arrested for their warrants. And that all that does is hurt that human being to not have to ever kick it. And that is one of my quote straight out of the mouth of a drug addict. His name is Victor. He was in our program for a while. He got housing at Lehigh. He almost died there inside where we found him, emaciated at 85 pounds. I took his keys away, and literally on the wall of his house, it said, I ain't gotta kick it. And he told me, Andrea, Seattle wants me to be a junkie. They want me to stay sick. They want me to be reliant on the services. And why I'm so proud of our federal administration and what I'm hearing, where they're saying, if you don't have recovery and self-sufficiency a part of your program, you can kiss HUD money goodbye. And we're not going to prioritize helping cities that don't enforce prohibitions on loitering, you know, camping, squatting in our parks and shared spaces. So, I mean, I would be kind of fearing what's happening at the federal level right now. And I'll just add quickly, for the first time ever, I'm actually being called by Dan Malone at DESC, meeting him next week, because these old guard providers need accountability providers so they can bolt us onto their grant application.
Yeah, and really quick, absent the drug issue or whatever, Katie Wilson has long said, and now she's the mayor, that she doesn't support the sweeping of homeless encampments. She's signaled that, certainly. You're already seeing that, right? The homeless population knows that the new mayor isn't going to sweep them away.
It's crazy. It happened pretty much overnight once Wilson won. I can tell you it is proliferating throughout our parks. I did a walkthrough yesterday. I stopped in my tracks. There were open fires. People were pouring gas. Our pavilions are being taken over. They're being burnt down. Camps and tents, open drug scenes are everywhere, especially and sadly in the Rainier Valley, Mount Baker areas where, you know, these are our Chinese international district. These are our smaller business, our lower income families that are, you know, having to put up with this crap. And even under the LEAD program, I told Lisa, you know, people still have to steal all day to support their drug habit. So when you give them a hotel and a view of the Space Needle and a smoking gazebo to smoke fentanyl, you're enabling to still rip me off. Like, how do you feel about that? And the philosophy of her program is that you can't create more harm once you're in there. So what's the incentive for people to give up drugs and stop committing crime? It doesn't help reduce the chaos on the streets.
Yeah, I feel like we take one little tiny bit, little step forward in this city, and then we take 10 steps backwards. And the suffering that results from that is absolutely unacceptable. All right, Andrea, I know you'll be out there watching it and keeping us updated. So thank you so much.
Will do. Bye, Brandy.
Yeah, not to mention we have the World Cup coming up. Kind of wish Trump had pulled it. I said, I don't want him to pull it. I don't want the businesses to suffer. But they just keep voting for this. And I know it's not everyone. It's a small fraction of the city because people don't care enough to turn their ballots in. But, you know, it's just remarkable to me. Is it? I don't know if it's remarkable to me anymore. I mean, we've been through these phases. And yet it's like they have such short memories where they can't remember that 5 years ago we were experimenting with drug decriminalization and things got so, so, so bad. They're like, let's try it again. So, I mean, World Cup with this, if I were Trump, I might even come out and say, if this leads to more open air drug abuse or you guys aren't clearing homeless encampments, we're just going to move it. We're going to move the games. Because it's not just a embarrassment, you know, to have people around the world come here and to see that, but it's also a safety concern. And I don't want people coming here from other countries and not understanding, you know, just how bad it is and being killed out on the streets or whatever it is. That's the last headline the city of Seattle needs. So unfortunate situation, but that's the truth of what's going on. Is they're going to take a softer hand on drug abusers? It shouldn't surprise anyone. All right, coming up next, you guys, it finally happened. I'm so excited to play this clip for those of you who haven't watched it yet. I always talk about the reason I will not support any new taxes in Washington State is they pay for things like laser hair removal for transgender prison inmates. I finally got a chance to ask a Democrat about why they think that's appropriate. We'll discuss it in our segment, Unbelievable, coming up next. First, our friends at Valentine Roofing have just been awarded the best roofing company in the Pacific Northwest for a third year in a row. Now that the holidays are over, if you suffered any sort of damage during the storms, those insane storms that we have had, reach out to our friends at Valentine to see if they can come and give you a quote to get it all fixed up. I know I had a few neighbors who had leaks in their roofs after the storms. When it comes to staying warm and insulated this winter, it does start with your roof and attic. Up to 25% of your home's heat is lost through your attic. So if your furnace is working overtime, it's time to call Valentine. When you bundle attic insulation with any new roof, you're going to save an additional 10% off the entire project, which I think is great. And on top of that, Valentine has great financing options built around your budget. So no matter what your home need is, you are guaranteed the Valentine experience, seamless communication, meticulous cleanup, and extra mile service. And they were great. They came and cleaned our gutters out and cleaned our roof, and they were wonderful. In fact, it was two people named, both were Connor. Connor and Connor. I'm like, what are the chances that two Connors came to work with to clean out our gutters? I was like,
well, and the founder is Connor Valentine.
Yeah. So I was like, what, he only hires people named Connor? I don't understand. But they were just great. So 206 Roofing. Please tell them that you heard about them on Undivided. All right. In our segment, Unbelievable, I've gotten at least one Democrat now to admit on the record that, yes, in fact, they believe that taxpayer money should go to fund laser hair removal and boob jobs for transgender prison inmates. All right, maybe not a Democrat, but a Democratic Socialist and a member of the House Democratic Caucus. So we played a clip yesterday of our interview with State Rep Sean Scott, who is a socialist who caucuses with Democrats in the state legislature in Olympia. And we talked about a variety of things. But the reason that he agreed to come and sit down with me for an extended interview that aired on Sundays with subscribers, no paywall, by the way, this week, is that he wanted to talk about his new tax proposal. He's proposing a statewide jobs tax. And Washington's in a budget crisis of its own doing. We know that they're going to have to make more cuts this year. But then on top of that, they are proposing all these new taxes, like his jobs tax, like an income tax. And so my point with Representative Scott is, look, if you want to talk about new taxes with me, like if we were great stewards of taxpayer funds, having great outcomes in education and public safety and all these areas, and you said, hey, you know, we need to raise taxes, I might not like it, but I'll be more willing to listen. But the issue I brought up with him is you guys are spending money on all sorts of nonsense that you shouldn't be spending money on. So don't come to us and claim that you're in the poorhouse and, oh my gosh, we have to pass an income tax and a jobs tax or we won't be able to feed the hungry. And that's really what they're telling the public. Oh my gosh, we won't be able to educate kids and feed the hungry and keep the public safe if we don't raise taxes. And the thing I always go back to call BS on that is the fact that we pay for laser hair removal for transgender prison inmates and boob jobs for transgender prison inmates. And there's special doctors. They're spending millions of dollars a year on specialized health care for a couple men who claim to be women now that they're behind bars and want to go in a women's prison and get all this specialized trans health care. So that's something that I brought up with State Rep. Sean Scott, and we had quite a lively exchange about it. That's the fundamental problem I have, is you guys are spending money on too many things.
Right.
Things like literally paying for laser hair removal and boob jobs mm-hmm. for transgender prison inmates, men who want to go in the women's prison and feel more feminine.
Right.
Do you really believe that taxpayer money should be spent on something like that?
I have no qualms with people who are within correctional facilities, which is, you know, when people come out of correctional mm-hmm. facilities, I had the chance to visit one of those earlier this year, a women's correctional facility in the 26th Legislative District. And what I saw was that it can be a tremendously isolating environment, especially for people who are in what is called segregated housing. It might be a difference in how we look at the role that these institutions can play, but I believe that I would believe that there are probably 100 things before we get to
doesn't matter. I'm asking you a
accessing
question.
Or making use of those kinds of resources within a prison.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Do you believe that taxpayer money should be spent giving a prison inmate laser hair removal?
I do. Yeah. I think
holy shit, Sean.
I think if that's
that's crazy.
I think if that's somebody who is in a state-run facility, there are many people who might be within that correctional facility that are undergoing all kinds of personal transformations that it'd be very difficult for people on the outside to comprehend. So I'm going to look a lot of places mm-hmm. before we get down to the part of saying wow. that inmates that are making use of public funds is the responsibility of our budget woes to the extent that they exist.
Wow. Yeah. The issue is that represents a mindset mm-hmm. that you'd spend our money on anything. You'd spend our money on anything.
No, I don't believe that's true.
If you will spend money, Sean, mm-hmm. our money
right.
that we work hard for, the mm-hmm. money that people who are far less well off than I am mm-hmm. see come out of their wallet every day, and if you would say that you would take that money and you would spend it so a convicted killer could get a boob job and laser hair removal, I cannot, that's a mindset that is broken beyond repair.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that there are probably a lot of people who are looking at many things that the state spends its money on and actually would probably not have as much of an issue if they felt with some of the differences that they might have with our trans community. And they'd say, well, that is a concern in the context of me feeling like I'm not able to access healthcare for myself. If somebody is facing a hospital closure, if somebody is spending a lot of money in order to get to college and it's way too unaffordable, I believe that there is a way that our economic system pits people one against the other. Mm-hmm. And so when you have institutions that are not doing as well as they could, people will often look towards, well, whoever's most proximal to them in the fight. The corporations are too distant and unaccountable. They will pick that fight with somebody who's a little bit closer to them. And so what my bill is about in a lot of ways is making sure that we're kind of resisting a zero-sum logic that mm-hmm. says you have to be worrying about, you know, what people are doing behind prison bars. That would be far less of a concern if you're somebody who I think had an economic floor, basic needs taken care of, mm-hmm. you felt you were able to go to college and it was affordable, roof over your head, access to healthcare. And I think that those, the kinds of social divisions that I think that you're leaning into tend to fade away a little bit when people's basic needs are taken care of.
I can worry about it all. And I'll tell you what, talking about basic needs, I'd rather that money go to someone who needs food on their table. I'd rather that money go to someone who needs a little bit of help to pay their rent that month.
Right.
And so I think you can look at it, you are picking one over the other.
No, I'm saying that, I'm saying in the same way that you're saying you can care about it all, I'm saying that we can be a state because that has more of what we need.
There comes a point where you have to stop taking money from people. There comes a point where the government has to stop taking money from people. And you believe there's no ceiling for you.
You think that the government, so you believe that the government should cease to function? I don't understand
I believe that there has to be a limit to the amount of taxation.
Well, there is. The state of Washington forgoes way more tax revenue than it actually collects. We have over 600 tax exemptions and loopholes in our state tax code.
Right, but you're saying that we can pay for it all. We can pay for it all.
No, if I was...
And it's just... If I was... That's absurd.
I think if... I believe that a budget is an exercise in discipline in a lot of ways. And I believe that if we were a state that said... And I'll keep it one-to-one. If I were somebody who believed that we can spend on literally anything, the first thing that we would look at is some of those large corporate exemptions that we have. Like I said, over 600 of them that exist. And... those have not been repealed. There are many of them that ought to be. And so what I'm getting at is that there's a lot more that the state foregoes in the way of revenue. Yeah. And many programs that we want to fund because people are going to depend on them.
Yeah. The reason I use that as an example, and yes, it's red meat for my audience, I get it, but it's one of these things that's so stupid that it shows that you're not foregoing anything. You're not foregoing, if you are willing to pay for a convicted killer to get his pubes removed, you are not foregoing anything.
I don't know if you had poop pubes on your bingo card for Undivided today. And I saw somebody say, deplatform this guy. This is the mainstream opinion. If this were just one crazy guy who was a socialist who said, yeah, we should pay for laser hair removal for transgender prison inmates, probably not someone I'd have on the show. First of all, it's a state lawmaker, but also they're doing that right now. It's already happening. While they're going to pass an income tax, he's trying to pass a new tax on jobs. So they're already spending money on stuff like this, and we have to expose it to a wider audience, to people who think, oh, I'll be generous. It's okay. You can pass an income tax on millionaires. No big deal. So they can turn around and spend it on boob jobs for a guy who stabbed his parents to death? Why are we doing this? So we have to expose this isn't just cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs, one person. This is cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs, an entire party in the state of Washington. That they might not be willing to sit down and defend it to my face and say, yes, absolutely, spend taxpayer money on that like Sean is. But they believe it because they're doing it. They signed off on it. They passed a budget with it in it. And that's just one example of many examples of the types of things that they're willing to reach into your pocket and spend your money on, and people need to know. It's unbelievable. All right, we're going to talk about this crazy story about a Hilton hotel banning ICE agents in Minneapolis and the bizarre series of events after that happened coming up next in National. First, are we in a tech bug bubble? Are we in an AI bubble? What's going on? Are you concerned? Oh my gosh, my 401k has been growing like crazy. Surely it has to come back down to earth at some point. Well, if you have questions about any of it, get a second opinion with our friend Zach Abraham at Bulwark Capital. Go to knowyourriskpodcast.com and just say, hey, Zach, I don't want any pressure, and he won't give you any pressure, but Brandy said you'd give me a second opinion on my retirement portfolio, and he would be more than happy to do that. So go to knowyourriskpodcast.com, knowyourriskpodcast.com. And also, you can join if you maybe don't have time for an individual thing. Join Bulwark Capital, Zach Abraham, for his New Year Reset. He's having a free live webinar January 29th at 3:30 p.m. Pacific. So that's a good way to just get some questions in without committing to a full meeting or anything like that. So knowyourriskpodcast.com, knowyourriskpodcast.com. All right, this story is so bizarre. So first, I feel like Hilton's getting a little bit of a bad rap here, but the way this was all handled was horrible. So ICE came out and DHS came out and shared an email where in Minneapolis, they had a team out. I think it was one of the teams investigating fraud, and they had a reservation at a Hilton affiliated hotel. And then they got an email saying, yeah, we're not going to let ICE agents or DHS agents stay here. So ICE said, hey, Hilton Hotels, why did your team in Minneapolis cancel our federal law enforcement officer and agents' reservations? Homeland Security, no room at the inn. Hilton Hotels has launched a coordinated campaign in Minneapolis to refuse service to DHS law enforcement. When officers attempted to book rooms using official government emails and rates, Hilton Hotels maliciously canceled their reservations. This is unacceptable. And indeed, they have the email to prove it. So there was a booking made. The people who booked it, because they're going to be there, a bunch of agents, get a response from a Hilton email. Subject line, upcoming reservation. Hello, this email is in regards to the reservation you made with the Hampton Inn Lakeville property. We have noticed an influx of government reservations made today that have been for DHS, and we are not allowing any ICE or immigration agents to stay at our property. If you are with DHS or immigration, let us know, as we will have to cancel your reservation. Please pass this info to your coworkers that we are not allowing any immigration agents to house on our property. Reply at your earliest convenience. They didn't get an email back, and then they said this. After further investigation online, we have found information about immigration work connected with your name, and we will be canceling your upcoming reservation. You should see a proper cancellation email in your inbox shortly from Hilton. That is crazy. That's crazy. So the only reason I say I think Hilton is sort of getting maybe too much of the brunt of this. So this is an affiliate hotel. It's like having a, you know, it's like you're going to a McDonald's and you pull up to the thing at a McDonald's and one person says, I don't like white people. You can't eat here. And it was like one person at a McDonald's franchise and you suggest that all of McDonald's won't serve white people. Do you know what I understand? You understand what I mean? So this hotel is run by a hospitality company called Everpeak. And it is a Hampton Inn by Hilton, but it's run by a company called Everpeak. So they put out a statement after this went viral. And they said, Everpeak Hospitality has moved swiftly to address this matter as it was inconsistent with our policy of being a welcoming place for all. We're in touch with the impacted guests to ensure they're accommodated. We do not discriminate against any individuals or agencies and apologize to those impacted. We are committed to welcoming all guests and operating in accordance with brand standards, applicable laws, and our role as a professional hospitality provider. So you think that would be the end of it, right? Like, okay, it was some unhinged maybe manager at a single Hampton Inn. It's been fixed and addressed. Oh, no, it hasn't. So Nick Sorter, who's an independent journalist, he was one of the people with me at the White House Antifa Roundtable. He's in Minneapolis working on the daycare fraud thing. And he decides, well, why don't I go stop by this Hilton? And first of all, and I texted Nick this morning. I said, Nick, your Hilton video is great, but I'm very concerned with how good of a liar you are, because he goes in kind of undercover, posing as a federal agent to this hotel to try to get a block of rooms after this statement where they said this has been resolved. Here's what happened.
Hello, how are you?
He's such a good liar.
Good. Do you have any rooms for tonight?
We should, yeah.
Okay. Like how many? Could we get like 10?
10?
I mean, yeah, I know that could be.
Let's see. Did you already make reservations by any chance?
No.
No? What's
first.
The name?
It would be just Nick. I'll just put it under my personal. I don't know if you can use a government rate or not, but.
Let's see. It depends, because there's a lot of stuff going on right now. What agency is it for?
They'd be Department of Homeland Security.
So we're not accepting people from immigration, ICE agents, DHS into our property. It's just the management ownership.
Okay, yeah. I thought that changed today. Was that?
I just talked to the owner of the building, uh-huh. And he didn't say there has been any changes. So
really? Okay.
Yeah, okay. It's just policy, you know.
Yeah, I mean, that's not your fault. Totally get that.
Nick Sorter. It was great, right? Talking about a government raid, all of these things. So clearly they put out this has been addressed. This has been taken care of. He walks in there. No, your Department of Homeland Security. Now, again, it could still be a rogue. It could be that guy. It literally could be that guy in the video who has just decided he hates ICE to take it upon himself, and he's not going to allow them to check in or whatever it is. Now, it could be the management. It could be the building owner or whatever it is. I don't believe it's Hilton. So Hilton put out a statement after this video, and this is the power of independent journalism. Who else would have gone in there and done that? Literally no one. So he puts out that video. Clearly, this is still happening, and Hilton says this. The independent hotel owner has had assured us that they'd fixed this problem, and they published a message confirming it. A recent video clearly raises concerns that they're not meeting our standards and values. As such, we are taking immediate action to remove this hotel from our systems. Hilton is and has always been a welcoming place for all. We are also engaging with all of our franchisees to reinforce the standards we hold them to across our system to help ensure this does not happen again. So just like that, this Hampton Inn is no longer going to be able to be a Hampton Inn by Hilton. So they'll have to be something else. But I saw a lot still even this morning of outrage at Hilton. Like, this isn't enough. Like, you have to do more. And I wanted to gauge whether you guys feel that way. I mean, is this incident, this single incident, enough for you to make a different choice when you go to book a hotel to say, at least for now, you're not going to book at a Hilton property? So I asked subscribers on Patreon, Locals, and X if you're less likely to stay at a Hilton after the Minnesota incident. Nicole?
No, I'm not going to let one moron ruin. I don't know. I like the Hilton. It's pretty affordable.
Well, let's just say there's like two hotels and you just have to make a choice. If one of them is a Hilton, is that going to dissuade you?
Probably not, because again, it's one person. I would not stay at that particular one for sure.
Oh, for sure not
for
that
sure.
one. Yes.
But no, I mean, again, I appreciate the statement. I appreciate that they kicked him off. So now I'm like, hey, I mean, you're coming out blatantly against this kind of discrimination. So now I'm kind of for you.
Yeah. And that's kind of what so 69% said yes, though, in our poll. Maybe the poll was confusing in the way it was worded. I don't know. I said the way I worded it, an independently owned Hilton hotel refused to provide rooms for Department of Homeland Security agents. Would this single incident make you less likely to stay at a Hilton in the future? 69% of you said yes. So there are some people who, because of this one thing, they're mad about it, even though Hilton has since addressed it. And I can't gauge everybody's knowledge of whether they know what Hilton said. Mm-hmm. So you can even go back, by the way. You can go change your vote whenever you want on our subscription platform. So maybe that would change. Finmu says, I voted no since Hilton cut ties with this independent hotel. And Sharon said the same. I voted no because corporate Hilton denounced that franchisee swiftly and cut ties. Shelley said yes, but knowing not all would be that way makes me hesitant to say that 100%. But I still think there is more than one that feels this way and may try the same thing if they are not harsh enough consequences for them. Richard, Hilton needs to remove license, and they did, from the franchisee immediately. Philip says, Brandy, your question is misleading since the owners of the hotel apologized and said it wasn't their policy, but on further investigation, the hotel still had the policy in place. And then at that point, Hilton revoked their license. So I would probably be more likely to stay at a Hilton since they took action against that franchisee. Yeah, and that's all you can ask, right? You as a company are never going to be able to control every employee. You're never going to be able to control it. You know, I see all those videos of like UPS drivers or whatever it is, or Amazon drivers just hucking someone's package up on the porch. So there's this automatic, oh, I want to be mad at UPS or I want to be mad at Amazon. No, you have to wait and see, how are they going to respond to this? How do they respond to it? Do they make it right or whatever it is? Because you can't control every single employee. You can only control your response to what an employee might do. Okay, quick other national story, which I'm surprised isn't impacting us in Washington state yet. But the federal government is halting proactively billions of dollars in funding to five states over concerns about whether non-citizens are getting benefits. So I think this is a continued response to the fraud that was uncovered in Minnesota. And look, again, let's differentiate between the proven fraud and things that look an awful lot like fraud in the Nick Shirley video. But I think there's this question about, should states be punished proactively? You know, if you're, where there's smoke, there's fire. So at what point, if you see something smoking, do you have to wait till it's fully engulfed in flames to put it out? Or should the government go in there and say, we're going to halt this now until we can get things all sorted out? And I think reasonable people can make arguments on both fronts. So from Fox News, federal officials to halt more than $10 billion in funding to five states over non-citizen benefit concerns. Those states are California, Colorado, Illinois, Minnesota, and New York. So I don't know why we're not on the list, per the usual, just being left out. Officials reportedly told the New York Post that the Department of Health and Human Services will freeze funding from the Child Care Development Fund, the Temporary Assistance for the Needy Fund, TAMF, and the Social Services Block Grant for those states over concerns the benefits are being fraudulently funneled to non-citizens. More than $7.3 billion in TAMF funding will also be withheld from the five states, along with nearly $2.4 billion from the Child Care Development Fund and another nearly $1 billion from the Social Services Block Grant. So I guess, and I do have questions about this, and I think it's a fair debate, right? If there's clearly some evidence of fraud, like New York has had some fraud in these areas, do you wait until the investigation runs its course, or do you stop the money until they prove that they're not funneling money to illegals? I don't know if there's a perfect answer for that. Senator Kirsten Gillibrand pointed out that she says it's going to hurt people in the meantime. Senator from New York, my faith guides my life in public service. It's our job to serve the people most in need and most at risk, no matter what state they live in or what political party their family or elected representatives belong to. To use the power of government to harm the neediest Americans is immoral and indefensible. This has nothing to do with fraud and everything to do with political retribution that punishes poor children in need of assistance. I demand that President Trump unfreeze this funding and stop this brazen attack on our children. Well, one thing they always fail to acknowledge is that fraud hurts the needy, too. Fraud hurts the kids, too. When you have people leeching off a system who aren't entitled to it, and when you have fraud to the tune of billions of dollars, that hurts the kids. That hurts the needy. That hurts the ability of that program to survive and to fund people down the road. And Democrats never seem to acknowledge that. Fraud is a big deal. And if you care about a program, if you think a program is important, you should want to root out every single cent of fraud. I always say that about the homeless industrial complex. If you actually care about the homeless, shouldn't you be concerned that we put billions into it and the homeless aren't getting help? Right? We should want to account for every dollar that it's actually being used to help the homeless. But for some reason, they don't care. Very strange. Very strange, these people. All right, we'll get to comments from the live stream coming up next and our closing sanity check, which will be about animal welfare. I thought it's a really nice one. Missed my dogs on vacation. Just been very animal-minded lately. First, if you're thinking about selling your home in 2026, reach out to our friend Wes Jones of SellWithWes.com. He is the guy you want to sell your home with. Not only, obviously, does he support this show, but Wes is a great guy, and he and his team offer unparalleled service and options for you, especially if you have a house where you know that a little bit of work needs to be done. Wes loves taking on those projects, helping manage them, pick the contractors, and he can even make it so you don't have to pay for any upgrades until closing. Ton of five-star reviews for Wes and his team at Wes Jones & Associates. Ann says, five-star experience from start to finish. Wes and his team are all about relationships, authenticity, and results. She said, when it was time to sell my childhood home, they staged it beautifully, hosted open houses that felt like neighborhood events, and brought in 200-plus people. We got four offers and sold it for $100,000. Over asking, you won't find a better team. And I have to agree. SellWithWes.com. SellWithWes.com. It really just is a better way to sell your home. All right. On, are drugs being decriminalized in Seattle? Are they not? What's going on? The Jeff Barrett. As per the usual, you can arrest them, but then they refuse to prosecute them. That's happening with a ton of things. It's like police can do their job. And hell, even prosecutors can do their job. But then you get some crazy judge. Nicole, you want to join us for comments?
Yeah.
If the criminal justice system isn't firing on all cylinders, then it's just worthless. So is your mic off?
Yeah, sorry.
Beep. Whoop. Oh, that's right. Michelle, yes. Richards. They just want more money to help drug addicts instead of holding them accountable. And they're never going to help the drug addicts. Mm. The best thing that Democrats can do is keep people addicted to drugs and keep people homeless, because it keeps the money coming in. It keeps the taxes and all of that stuff. That's what they want. Dylan, I work and live downtown, and this isn't helping anyone. I am almost 2 years clean and sober. Drug court is a huge reason why I was successful. But what led into that was getting arrested and being given the option between prison or getting clean and rebuilding my life. I chose life. So happy I did. God is good. I pray for the city. Lord knows it's not looking too good. And every person we've had on the show who's been a former addict has always said, it's jail that changed my life. Every single one, without fail, never in my career of journalism have I met a former drug addict who said anything except jail.
Yeah, I mean, it has to be this ultimatum that, I mean, every day they have a choice whether they can sit there and do drugs or go get help. I mean, that choice is there and they know it. They choose to sit there. So if you're having, just because somebody different is coming around and asking, it's not going to choose or it's not going to change their choice.
No, you're not in your right mind.
No.
You're thinking about drugs. And someone is like, how about not drugs? And they're like, go away.
Forced trial. Let's get off of drugs and see what happens.
Yeah. On my conversation with Sean Scott about laser hair removal for trans inmates, which he calls healthcare.
Ugh.
Louis says, great interview and conversation. Stephanie, easy for them to spend taxpayer money while we are struggling. Casey Watson, you wonder how these people get elected. The state's run by leftists. Well, the voting process and vote counting is also run by leftists. No, he represents Seattle. And as we've said, Seattle wants to pay for laser hair removal for trans inmates. On the Hilton franchisee banning ICE agents, Weisscastle says the email probably came from back office employees who never actually spoke with hotel personnel. And that's why I said it literally could have been that guy at the front desk who Nick Sorter talked to.
It could have been, or just the manager, not the owners, not the, you know, people running it, but just the manager of the employees that run the front desk. Just don't do this. And that's what he said. He said, I just talked to my manager back there.
And Nick said that he didn't even really hear. He thinks he was just going back there hoping that Nick would leave.
But somebody that's willing to say, to cancel those reservations and to make that kind of bold statement, right, is not going to fold easily. Not be like, oh, okay, yeah, like, okay, go ahead. Well, you can all stay here.
Because they're foregoing thousands of dollars.
Yes.
And for a hotel.
I don't think they care about the money. These people don't care about the money.
But that's the thing is, like, they're clearly so set in their principles. Because 10 rooms, just like that, and Nick came in at 10 p.m., so if you're a hotel and somebody comes in at 10 p.m. and they're saying, we're going to fill 10 of your vacant rooms.
Yeah.
Any sane person would be like, welcome
in. Business person.
Right. Business person. Let's see. Secret bass rigs investigate their motivations. If it's to protect their illegal immigrant staffers, then they deserve to be prosecuted. Mm-hmm. Let's see. On Trump pausing child care funds, Milkman. A jury in Minnesota convicted Abitafa Youssef, a Somali man, of over $7 million in fraud. And the judge overturned it. Even when they get caught, they're getting off. I'll have to read into that. I haven't heard about what
I
the rationale
about some of those
might be.
Stories. I read about a bunch of them over. I was kind of obsessed with the story for a while. It's pretty wild.
Oh,
and
it's
how
been
many
going
have
years.
Been investigated, but they're continuing to allow it.
Yeah. Caroline, money should be stopped until the investigation is complete because once gone, you can't get it back. It's the only way to make sure money is spent wisely and those receiving it are put on notice. And this is the importance of regular routine audits. Is, again, the state can't stop every single instance of fraud proactively. That's just not realistic. The budget is too big. But there should be an expectation that every program that gets taxpayer funds has some sort of regular routine audit. And then what do? Well, you find the fraud and you fix it. And that's what the state, that's why we have auditors. That's what the state is supposed to do. But in Minnesota, they knew there was fraud. It was going on for years. They didn't want to be called racist for exposing it.
The amount
totally different.
Of money is unacceptable, though.
Right.
The amount of money they're giving per child when there's, you know, three children or whatever it is, it's an unacceptable amount of money. You can't, No. No, even if there were that three kids there, that's too much money to be giving those people for watching three kids. That's too much money.
And then it's like, you know, the government can't protect or prevent every instance of fraud. But sometimes the money is given out so freely, they don't plan to stop fraud. No. I mean, the money that was stolen from our state during the pandemic in COVID unemployment funds from Nigerian fraudsters or something. It was like, you had no safeguards. No safeguards to make sure that $500 million wasn't stolen by Nigerian fraudsters. Mm-hmm. So to me, that should be criminal. And nobody ever even lost their jobs over that. Wild.
It doesn't come from their direct account. I don't know why they don't consider tax money their money because they're paying taxes as well. But if it doesn't come from their account, they just don't care.
It's like when you get your first. It's like when you get your first debit card when you're a teenager. You don't think of it as money. You're like, oh, you know, and it's, they just don't think of it as money. A little super chat to brighten our day. Adorable Deplorables says, a little bit late, but happy new year. We absolutely adore the show and appreciate the Undivided team and family so much. Blessings to you all. Well, blessings to you, sir. Blessings to you. I've now met Adorable Deplorable and Adorable Deplorable Junior in person.
They came to a rally, right?
Yeah, think the Boys and Girls Sports Rally, I believe. So I love meeting people in the wild where they say, oh, I'm so-and-so. This is my screen name on the show. And then it never lines up. I'm like, why is your screen name Adorable Deplorable or whatever it is? But all right, Nicole, thank you so much. And with that, let's get to our closing sanity check. That the United States hasn't entirely moved away from animal testing at this point is just insane to me. I mean, you know, science has come so far. We shouldn't have to test anything on animals, really, right? And that is what RFK Jr. believes as well. And he wants the U.S. to move entirely away from any form of animal testing on anything.
At HHS, where all the major agency heads, sub-agency heads, are all deeply committed to ending animal experimentation. And what we found, we've done internal studies now that show that the predictivity of animal model is very, very poor for human health outcomes. There's much more efficient ways of predicting human health outcomes. There are 100,000 monkeys, primates, non-human primates, that are in primate labs around the country for research purposes. There's another 20,000 that are imported every year, and we're very concerned about that. We're trying to put an end to that completely. And the badge of a really humane nation is the way that it takes care of its animals.
Yeah, I agree with that. And, you know, Fauci's not going to like that because he can't torture beagles for science, but I think that it's well past time we stop experimenting on animals. That has been our closing sanity check. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Why you want to do another one? I don't know.
Yeah, maybe.
Great. I don't have anything else sane to say.
Sorry. Okay, there we go.
That has been our closing sanity check. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving Common Sense a comeback. We appreciate every single one of you. We'll see you back here on the live show tomorrow at noon.